Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Judge rewarded for OKC cover-up with a Supreme Court nomination. We've got that, plus the story of how a couple of Hellfire missiles hopped a flight here to Portland. But first, we begin with the beginning of the end of the Syrian war. Maybe. With a piece from the New York Times, first Russian jets leave Syria after Putin's withdrawal order. The first group of Russian fighters left Syria on Tuesday. That's the Ides of March 2016, the defense ministry said, a day after Vladimir V. Putin ordered the withdrawal of the main part of his country's forces. The process apparently started soon after Mr. Putin's announcement, and Russian television broadcast pictures of soldiers loading heavy equipment onto giant cargo planes in the dark. The defense ministry later released a video of Russian fighter jets flying home and Su-34 warplanes landing soon after. The Rossiya 24 satellite news channel broadcast live footage of the first two fighter jets landing at an airbase in the southern city of Voronezh. The first pilot to emerge was reportedly carried aloft by fellow soldiers on the ground and lots of ballyhoo. So the deployment of Russian forces helped turn the tide of the war in favor of President Bashar al-Assad of Syria. The sudden announcement of their withdrawal will put pressure on the government in Damascus to be more flexible in peace talks with the opposition. Although the timing of the announcement caught Western powers by surprise, the withdrawal of the Russian forces was not entirely unexpected. Mr. Putin has achieved his main goals in Syria, including shoring up Moscow's foremost Arab ally, preventing the West from forcing a leadership change from the outside, and burnishing Russia's image as a major player on the world stage. In addition, should Mr. Assad require renewed support on the battlefield, the small but effective Russian force could easily be deployed. Now, James, we have a couple of other related stories to this as well, but I'd probably look to you in some ways for the analysis on this story. And I definitely know that when the announcement came, it was, again, kind of greeted here in the States as, my God, what will we never know what that Putin's going to do next.
Well, it is an interesting move. It is certainly a major move on the Syrian chessboard right now, and it does change the calculus of the peace talks to the point where there may actually be room for some sort of conclusion or settlement of this terrorist insurgency. Maybe. And I think the maybe is the key part here. It at least opens the door to that because it changes the calculus for the United States, at any rate, that gives them a something of a face-saving maneuver here, that they can take this opportunity to bring it back to where we were 5 years ago, where there's some sort of constitutional change in Syria and perhaps some sort of power-sharing agreement or something. If Putin can put the pressure on Assad and the Syrian government generally to let that happen, which is apparently part of what's going on here, then there may be an opportunity for that. But there's a lot of other players at the table here, as we know, and they don't necessarily change anything that they're thinking or doing based on this, as we can see from Turkey continuing to do airstrikes in Iraq against the Kurds, and Saudi and Qatar and the Gulf states generally, of course, they still have their own interest in Syria and seeing Assad go, but seeing that their Sunni insurgency also steps up to the plate here. So there's still a lot of players at the table and a lot going on. And I think the real question is whether the U.S. and NATO and Israel, let's not forget Israel, oh, which, by the way, there's a Haaretz article I'll draw people's attention to, surprised by Russia's withdrawal from Syria, Israel gets assurances, talking about how Russian diplomats sought to reassure Israel on Tuesday that its security would not be harmed by the winding down of Moscow's military intervention. So again, there's a lot of players that have to be placated here. But the question is, will the NATO, Israel, Gulf state side throw the Kurds under the bus? And of course, that's what Turkey wants. Throw them under the bus. Of course, they're not going to get the state that they want. So there's a lot going on here. And it really does depend on whether or not they take this as the potential towards a peace offering settlement of some sort. But again, of course, who ends up ultimately under the bus in all of this? It's the Syrian people who've had their entire country destroyed and likely to see their government disbanded in some form or other, all because of outside intervention.
So on the point of what you noted, we'll include also an article from Reuters, Turkish airstrikes in northern Iraq kill 45 Kurdish militants, and one from Time magazine, Syrian Kurds plan to unite threatens to disrupt the peace process. That's both Syria's opposition groups and Turkey likely to be angered by this move. So again, that's even more sort of players on this grand chessboard, James, if you will. And again, we'll include those things in the show notes, just as we include everything we talk about on these shows down in the show notes for you to go further read all of these things and click those links and follow those stories. Now, the big story this morning, as I was even on the air, seemed to be, who is this guy? Merrick Garland. Seems like he's being rewarded for an involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing cover-up, and he gets a Supreme Court nomination. Now, James, they've talked about this guy before during one of Obama's numerous other Supreme Court nominees, but I did a search of my own website's archives and your website's archives, and neither of us have ever mentioned Merrick Garland by name. Now, I did talk about like this a little bit this morning on the Morning Monarchy and some of the recent things at that moment were saying, well, now the Democrats don't seem to be pleased because this isn't that, kind of activist guy or the minority or all the other things that all the different kind of groups want to have in there. So what helped me out actually was tweeting back and forth a little bit with Scott Horton of Anti-War, and he talked about it a little bit on his show this morning. And we both looked back into this April 2010 New York Times article that was written by Charlie Savage. And it is kind of making the rounds again today. And I'll read briefly from it because I think it helps kind of flesh out who Merrick Garland is in the New York Times article, How Bombing Case Helped Shape Career of a Potential Justice. Days after a huge bomb killed 168 in Oklahoma City in April 95, Merrick B. Garland was on the ground even as bodies were still being recovered, examining the crime scene and preparing for an eventual prosecution. Judge Garland was then the highest-ranking Justice Department official dispatched to Oklahoma City in the aftermath of the bombing. He spent the ensuing weeks helping to start the case and later supervised the prosecutors from department headquarters. For Judge Garland, the Oklahoma City bombing was the centerpiece of a constellation of federal criminal cases in which he played a role before the President Bill Clinton appointed him to the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in 1997. So friends and former colleagues say that the Oklahoma City case in particular had a lasting emotional impact on Mr. Garland. At the same time, he was the second ranking figure in the office of the Deputy Attorney General, Jamie S. Gorelick, a job with broad responsibilities over the entire department. But Ms. Gorelick recalled he insisted that she send him to Oklahoma City to help begin the investigation in person, he not only volunteered, he basically said, you need to let me go, end quote, from Jamie Gorelick. So Jamie Gorelick, she connects to the Clintons. She connects to controlled demolition of economies and buildings. So, James, this is kind of bedrock stuff of all the things we've kind of talked about throughout the years on our respective shows and all the people out there doing work into this area. This is about the Aryans in Elohim City and trying to shield essentially the whole informant system within the black ops world, whether that's OKC or WTC-93 or 9/11. So when you connect Jamie Gorelick's wall, this is this famous memo she talked about being the divide between all the alphabet agencies that, gosh, shucky darns, we just can't stop 9/11 or WTC-93 or OKC. So it seems like you get rewarded in some ways for your service to the oligarchs, but maybe not immediately. It sometimes maybe takes 21 years like it has for Merrick Garland. James?
Yes, that's right. And lest we underplay the significance of Garland in the OKC investigation, as that article goes on to say, several prosecutors who worked on the case said Mr. Garland worked tirelessly to help run the OKC investigation from a command center in a telephone company building blocks from the blast site, overseeing search warrants, interacting with other law enforcement agencies, and meeting with surviving victims. He appeared in court for the preliminary hearings of the two main suspects, Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. And it goes on to say that he was pushing for the death penalty for McVeigh and Nichols and got it, of course. Well, got it in the case of McVeigh, question mark. More on that in my expose of Timothy McVeigh from last year. But yes, he was absolutely at the heart of that. And of course, the Unabomber and other high profile investigations like that. So he is a cover-up artist, so we should not be surprised, I think, that he is being rewarded for his faithful service to the Gorelick contingent in the Justice Department that he has served so well for the last couple of decades. I think, again, this is a foregone conclusion. However, the Republicans are saying they're going to veto anything that's put forward by the president, so I guess we'll see if that political promise bears any weight. But It's not like I'm holding my breath waiting for some Republican president to appoint some angel that's going to come down from the heavens to oversee the Justice Department. It's going to be an insider cover-up crony one way or another, and Garland is no exception.
So there's that 2010 article from the New York Times that we'll include. There's one from today, from USA Today, that's not as good. It's a little more human interest-y angle. But Garland was the man to see in Oklahoma City bombing inquiry, and we'll include a link back to a 2008 article about Jamie Gorelick, Mistress of Disaster, and just straight-up Wikipedia link to read more about Merrick Garland and all these sort of characters on the stage, James. Our third and final story this week, how Hellfire missiles hopped a flight to Portland. On Saturday, last Saturday, March 12th, a pair of Hellfire missiles was pulled from a crate on a civilian Air Serbia flight and were due to head to the United States. The flight had departed from Beirut and was intercepted in the Serbian capital of Belgrade. Serbia's N1 television said Sunday that airport security discovered the missiles after bomb-sniffing dogs raised the alarm. News agencies following the story said the final destination for the missiles was Portland, Oregon. The news of the discovery prompted a brief moment of panic, and James, I'll interrupt this Global Post article to note, here in Portland it was Sunday morning, and even Oregon Public Broadcasting was kind of jokingly asking, okay, Portland, who ordered the missiles? And I had people tweet me of going, oh, James, you must have made someone mad there, as I am and have been based here in Portland, Oregon for over a decade now. Continuing, it appeared that someone might have been trying to smuggle live missiles onto a civilian airliner. European aviation officials expressed concern about security at Beirut's Rafik Hariri Airport earlier this year, and British Airways stopped flying cargo from there this month. It wasn't until Monday that the Lebanese army said the missiles were training models that contained no explosives and were being sent back to the company that made them. Contrary to initial reports, the missiles were on their way to Portland, Maine, according to a U.S. official familiar with the case who spoke on condition of anonymity because details of commercial arms deals are confidential. They are being shipped back to the private U.S. company Orbital ATK, based in Texas, who provided them to the Lebanese Army on a temporary basis as part of a U.S. government program to integrate the Hellfire missile system into aircraft used by the country's armed forces. Aviation experts say the practice of shipping these inert missiles on commercial airlines is common. So these missiles, James, turned up over the weekend, are part of a proposed $146 million package of military support announced by the U.S. State Department in June 2015. The Lebanese army has faced pitched battles with Islamic State militants on its eastern border with where? Syria. So this story, James, from Global Post is a good one, and has lots of links to a lot of these other issues and a lot of these other things. But had you heard really anything about this story?
It did come across the news wires, and as soon as I saw it, I thought about you. And then lo and behold, it was on Morning Monarchy. And I think your take on Morning Monarchy was right on the button. It's just another sign that there's so many weapons out there that the U.S. has ceded out to the world through their defense contractors that, you know, how can we keep track of them all? I mean, who knows? I mean, it's surprising that this would even make the news. I mean, of course there's weapons being shipped all around the world. It's just that this one was actually, you know, noted and logged rather than the secret shipments from Libya up to Syria in the Benghazi gate and all that nonsense. But at any rate, Portland, Maine, well, it could make a good Stephen King novel in the future.
Maine. So that Global Post article, like I said, mentions lots of other incidents of this. Like the U.S. wants its rocket back after it was accidentally sent to Havana by mistake. This story is just being talked about in the last couple of months with an event that happened 2 years ago. Now, something today in the news, as the ATF, hey, there's the ATF again, James. They confirm Fast and Furious guns have been tracked to one of the El Chapo hideouts. And one of the more notorious kind of instances of what they call a broken arrow, where you've got weapons flying around the world, goes back, James, all the way to 2007 in the Media Monarchy website archives, where 70 were punished in the accidental nuke flight. That is where live nuclear warheads flew from Minot in North Dakota all the way across the country to Barksdale. And we were still in the very heady, crazy, oh my God, Bush and Cheney might actually kill us all kind of days, James. So we'll include all of those links there. But again, yeah, I think it just sort of shows we don't know how much... how could we be expected to stop everything when we can't keep track of all the weapons? So when things pop up, it's, you know, there's enough plausible deniability to kind of go around for everyone to share. James, do you need some good news?
Oh, please. Yes.
I published the latest episode of the spinoff from this series. We call it Good News Next Week. I'm doing it once a week. And on the latest episode, Bacteria Eats Plastic in a Breakthrough New Discovery. And plus a bit about labeling GMO salmon here in Oregon on that episode. And on that note, James, a little bit of good news today as the DARC Act was defeated in the Senate. That's the act kind of euphemistically referred to as the Denying Americans the Right to Know Act about what's in and on their food. So that has been defeated for now. And we know that the way they work is they'll kind of keep coming back and back and back, and we'll forget about it. And then later we'll hear that they've passed it. But that's why we're all kind of vigilant here, and we can share a lot of information. And hashtag New World Next Week, James, has way too much news to discuss here. And I think that's a good thing, as everyone, it kind of shows that everyone is staying involved. Two New World Next Week headlines that you tweeted out: James French parents face lawsuits, prison possibly for posting pictures of their own children online. And in Canada, CSIS have used special C-51 police powers dozens of times already, James. So we'll just implore everybody to keep sharing all the news from all around the world, open source style, and for supporting independent media.
That's it. Well, let's do it again next week. Thank you again.
All right, buddy. Take care.